To us a child is born. Isaiah chapter 9, verses 2 to 7. The people walking in darkness have seen a great light. On those living in the land of the shadow of death, a light has dawned. You have enlarged the nation and increased their joy. They rejoice before you, as people rejoice at the harvest, as men rejoice when dividing the plunder. For as in the day of Midian's defeat, you have shattered the yoke that burdened them, the bar across their shoulders, the rod of their oppressor. Every warrior's boot used in battle and every garment rolled in blood will be destined for burning, will be fuel for the fire. For to us a child is born, to us a son is given, and the government will be on his shoulders, and he will be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. Of the increase of his government and peace there will be no end. He will reign on David's throne and over his kingdom, establishing and upholding it with justice and righteousness from that time on and forever. And the zeal of the Lord Almighty will accomplish this.
So I was the angel Gabriel, standing in this vast cathedral wearing my mother's nightdress in front of the whole school. And the stone floor was so cold on my bare feet that I delivered my glad tidings hopping from one foot to the other. My classmates all stood around with tea towels on their heads, clutching toy giraffes, and a tinfoil star hung above us on a piece of string. Nativity plays can be very dangerous. They can be very dangerous because each time you and I are forced to sing Little Donkey and made to join in with the actions, it is like a jab in the heart that inoculates us against the relevance of the Christmas message. And the sign that you are immunized is not that you hate Christmas. Far from it. You love a carol service. The sign that your immunization is bang up to date is carol services really stir you up. And you go home kind of wistful. The music, the readings, the smell of the candles, the mulled wine send you back to the Christmases of your childhood. And you think of all that's happened since. And you wish you could rewind the clock. You wish you could recapture the magic of that time of innocence. It's very clever how the vaccine works. It gets us to think that Christmas is lovely, but Christmas is really for the children. It's not really for us, not now, because now we've lived a little. Now we've been caught up in the crossfire of family breakup. Now we've had to stand by the graves of people we love. Now we know what it is to be surrounded by a whole hatful of friends and still feel terribly alone. And now we have grown-up questions. And away in the manger, away with the fairies, is a touching fantasy, but it's the last place we would go to look for grown-up answers to our grown-up questions. But you know, friends, it's not the Christmas story that is the fantasy. It's we who are the fantasists. We who will spend the Christmas holidays trying to make believe that, hey, things not so bad after all. We who will cover things over with tinsel and fairy lights and pull on our comedy Santa hats and watch It's a Wonderful Life and try and make up for everything by buying the people we love presents we can't even afford. And we will hold hands and we will tell each other this year it's going to be different. And the real message of Christmas won't let us do that. Because the real message of Christmas rubs our faces in reality and says, face facts. Things are worse than you dare to admit. In the famous Christmas reading from the prophet Isaiah, it's printed out on the server sheet there. We're told whom Christmas is for. And it turns out Christmas is not for the children. Christmas is for people walking in darkness. Now, I don't think I need to persuade anyone that our world is a dark place. You just have to pick up a newspaper, read about the roadside bomb in Afghanistan, detonated by, what, a 13-year-old boy? You just have to read about what the government is doing to its own people in Zimbabwe. You just have to read about the gangs in Glasgow who fight over territory with sticks and bottles and knives. Gangs of children as young as 8 who say they just want to feel like they belong someplace. Or you could read about the debt-ridden mother on a bleak estate in West Yorkshire who kidnaps her own child to make a bit of money. And I guess we would all agree there are people who are walking in darkness. So maybe Christmas is for them, but not particularly for us. We're not walking in the dark. Not us. But what is it like to walk in the dark? I once brushed my teeth in the dark. And it was only after a couple of scrubs that I realized that onto my toothbrush I had squeezed out a tube of athlete's foot cream. Life in the dark is tricky. You get things badly wrong. You trip up over things. You knock things over. You can't see where you're going. You feel a little bit afraid of what might be out there in the dark. Isn't that us? Isn't that a picture of us? We get things badly wrong. We say things we wish we hadn't said. We do things we wish we hadn't done. We just can't help it. We just go tripping up and hurting ourselves and hurting the people we most love. And sometimes we fall so badly we bring our whole family crashing down with us. And at the time, we can hardly see what we're doing. We're not really sure where we're going in our lives. And the truth is we feel a little bit afraid. A little bit afraid of what might be out there in the year ahead. It's not just the people in the newspapers. Isaiah is describing an experience we all know, all of us, walking in the dark. And the question is, why? That was what everyone was asking in the wake of the Baby P case. Why did this happen? Was it the system that broke down? Were the structures not properly in place? Whose fault was it? How could these people do that? Everyone was baffled. We claim to be enlightened people. Yet why do we live like people who are stumbling around in the dark? Isaiah says, we're in the dark because we've turned our back on the God who made us. And when you turn your back on the God who makes sense of who you are, you walk away from light and into darkness. And turning our back on God will always lead to the darkness of conflict and the darkness of despair. And you say, well, how so? Well, it leads to conflict because when I turn my back on God, what I'm saying is that in my life, I will be God. I will determine what is right and what is wrong. But then when you and I meet, who gets to be God? Do we go with your way or do we go with my way? See, if there's no God to act as a kind of referee to appeal to, then Nietzsche was spot on. All that's left for us to do is fight for it. And that's why a world that turns its back on God will always be a world of conflict. Not just bombs over Baghdad, but words over the washing up. Each of us doing whatever it takes to get my way. And we know it shouldn't be like that. We've said we are no more than animals. But when we behave like animals, we know we are being less than human. Turning our back on God leads to the darkness of conflict, and it leads to the darkness of despair. Because what we've said is we must get rid of this childish fantasy of God. We must grow up and we must go looking for rational answers. But the thing I think we're just catching up on is that if there is no God, if the universe is ultimately totally irrational, that sort of pulls the rug out from under the whole idea of rational thought. We long for meaning. But the whole idea of finding meaning in a meaningless universe is tricky. The Enlightenment has left us stumbling in the dark. That we're tripping along. We're tripping along from school to college to a job to the gym to parties to ballroom dancing classes to the bar to the beach. Our days are packed. We are busy doing everything and nothing. Because we're not really sure what is really worth giving our lives to, because we're not really sure why we're here. Isaiah says, we live in the land of the shadow of death. Death casts its shadow over everything. We live in a culture that says there's no God, and when you die, that's it, all over. And we think, great, let's live a little. But in our quieter moments, we know it doesn't work like that. We know that we fear the shadow of death. We know that if death is the end, then that makes a mockery of our lives. What are we doing? If you're currently studying A-levels, imagine slaving away for your exams. Just imagine it for a moment. And then word gets out, there are going to be no exams. No exams, no college places, no jobs. But the teacher tells you, you've got to keep working. Working through the syllabus. What would that do to your enthusiasm for writing your essays? Your enthusiasm for getting out of bed in the morning and studying all day? Wouldn't it kind of take the edge off things? It's no surprise that the incidence of depression in under 25s is rising, and the age of the male midlife crisis is lowering. In the land of the shadow of death, it's hard to know why we get out of bed in the morning. And Christmas is the classic time when we try and have it both ways. We do away with God. We say the world is ultimately meaningless. And we hold up our cigarette lighters and we say, hey, it's not so dark. It's okay. And Christmas says, no, face reality. A world that turns its back on God is a dark place. There's no answer to the conflict. No answer to the despair. Carry on walking away from God, and all that the future holds for us is the shadow of death. Now you may be thinking, hold on, this is not very Christmassy, is it? Well, it's not very jingle bells, but Christmas is for people walking in darkness. And the thing is, we will never see why Christmas is relevant to grown-ups like us until we see that we too are walking in darkness. And when we feel the gloom of that, that's when we'll see why the second half of what Isaiah says is such good news. The people walking in darkness have, do you see, seen a great light. The light of God has broken in on our darkness. When you're lost in the mountains at night, and you see the flash of the torches of the people who are coming to look for you, your heart leaps for joy. Those lights are not irrelevant. Those lights are for you. And Isaiah is saying, with his great searchlight, God has come to track us down and to lead us out of the darkness and to take us home. He's come for you. And you see the difference the coming of God's light makes. Actually, we've not printed it out, but it was in the reading from Isaiah 9. Isaiah talks about every warrior's boot that was used in battle will be destined for burning. In other words, not just the weapons of mass destruction, but even down to the boots they wear. Every last scrap of the sort of war and domestic violence and verbal abuse that has hurt us will be burnt up. Where there was conflict, there'll be peace. And where there was despair, there will be joy. Isaiah says, they rejoice before you as people rejoice at a harvest. They rejoice because they've been given hope. Where there was a wasteland, there is now harvest. And Isaiah goes on to paint a vision of the future. And he says this whole broken world will be made new. Not just the broken economy will be fixed, but broken bodies and broken hearts will be fixed too. Never to break again. And you see why? He gives us the reason. Second line down. For to us a child is born. There will be peace and joy in a world made new because of a baby who has been born for us. And we think, what a letdown. I mean, what do you really need right now? If you could ask God for one thing that would make a difference, a real difference to your life, what would it be? We're lost in the darkness of conflict and despair, and he gives us a baby. One Christmas, I was given a National Trust waterproof picnic rug. What do you do when you are given a National Trust waterproof picnic rug? So hard to know how to react. This is someone who has taken a lot of trouble to think about you and to think about the sort of person you are and the things you might like. And after all that careful thought, what they come up with is a National Trust waterproof picnic rug. It gets you worried. I mean, do I come across as the sort of person who would actually enjoy a National Trust waterproof picnic rug? I mean, do I come across as the sort of person who think that was a fun thing to have? I'm still young. I listen to Coldplay in the car with the volume turned up to prove that I am still young. And they give me this as though I'm practically retired. And it breaks your heart because you think of all the money they spent and it's just going to sit there in the cupboard. And it's so hard to know where to look to say thank you like you mean it. What is God doing giving us a baby? Funny thing is, that National Trust waterproof picnic blanket, we use it all the time. Once we actually opened it up and tried it on a picnic, it was brilliant. We have even given it to our friends as presents, which you may think is sad. But it turns out we shouldn't have written it off quite so fast. And Isaiah says, don't write off the baby. Because the baby didn't stay a baby. The baby grew up. And the reason he can lead us out of darkness into light is, do you see, he is called the Wonderful Counselor. Literally, it's the supernatural counselor. Everyone else you could turn to is just feeling their way in the dark. They're just guessing. But this one is Mighty God. Not just another baby born in the dark. This is the God who made our world come into our world, which means he's not guessing. He knows why he made us. If we're looking for the answers, he's the one to turn to. Trouble is, we worry. We worry that his answers will cramp our style, make us less human. But his counsel to us isn't just so many rules chucked down from heaven. He was born as a man. In other words, you look at Jesus and you see God showing us what it means to be fully human. There is never anyone so free as Jesus. And yet so humble, so gentle, and yet so fearless. His best friend said of Jesus, he never once saw him do anything or say anything that hurt anyone else. Imagine a whole world of people like him. No, it's living without God that has made us less human. And Christmas says God has come into our dark world to show us how to live again, to show us how to be fully human. Only it's obvious that we need more than just someone to show us how to live. Our broken lives need fixing. Which is why it's such a relief. He's Mighty God. When your iPhone breaks, it's got to go back to Apple. They made it. They can fix it. Here is the one who made us. And he's not just come with wisdom to show us how to live. He's come with power to fix us. The miracles that Jesus did were not just random party tricks to wow the crowd. He healed the sick. He raised the dead. The lame stood up and walked. And all the while he says to people, do you see what I'm doing? Do you see who I am? I am the one the prophets promised God would send to come into this world and pick all the broken pieces up and put them back together again. Well, I guess one of the reasons we're nervous of letting him touch our lives is we're kind of suspicious of his motives. What are his intentions? Are they good? Well, Isaiah says, in him we see the quality of God's love. He calls him the everlasting Father. And the trouble is, we know fathers. We know fathers who've walked out on us, or fathers who never listen to us, or fathers we keep having to prove ourselves to. We know fathers. But here is the fatherly love that we long for. Here is the one who loves us and who will never stop loving us. And if you're not sure about that, look at the next title he's given, Prince of Peace. He's the one who will succeed where all the diplomats fail. He will bring an end to conflict. You see, for as long as we've turned our backs on one another, on God rather, we will be fighting one another. Because I want my way and you want your way. The only way we will start to treat one another as human beings deserve to be treated is when we start to treat God as God deserves to be treated. And then it's not so much by trying to get my way over you, it's both of us working together to bring about God's good way in his world. Peace with God is the only hope of peace with one another. And Isaiah claimed that one day God would come and restore us to peace with him. Let me read a verse from the New Testament that explains how Jesus does that. It's from Paul's letter to the Colossians, and he says, "For God was pleased to have all his fullness dwell in Jesus, and through him to reconcile to himself all things by making peace through his blood shed on the cross." Now, when we think of the things that we've done that have added to the darkness in this world, we might think there's no chance of peace with God. We think, well, not now. He's not going to have me, not after the way I've treated him. But on the cross, what we see is the Prince of Peace takes on his own shoulders all the ugly consequences of the way we have walked out on God. And he says, "I forgive you. Now come back and live at peace with me." Not sure that his intentions are good? He laid down his life for you because he wanted you out of the dark and back into the light of his love. That's how committed he is to our good. So this baby, at Christmas, what we do is we take him in our arms for a bit and then we hand him back. And we think he's sweet, but he's the last person we would ever look to for answers. Turns out he's the one person worth turning to. Because the baby didn't stay a baby. He grew up. And he showed himself to be the wonderful counselor, the only one with wisdom to make sense of our lives. The mighty God, the only one with power to fix our broken lives. The everlasting Father, the one who loves us with the love that we long for. The Prince of Peace. Come to reconcile us to our Maker. The bottom line is that he is God's appointed king of God's eternal kingdom. And he's come so we could be part of that kingdom. And you say, well, hold on. If he has come, how come the world is still such a dark place? Well, one day he will come again. And he will finally drive away all the darkness and set up his eternal kingdom where there will be peace and joy and no more tears. But in the meantime, he's calling us to recognize who he is. He's calling us to acknowledge him so that we'll be ready for when he comes again. See, we're lost in the mountains, in the dark, and he comes to each one of us as our king at Christmas and says, "I am the light of the world. Will you follow me? Will you follow me through the darkness and into my everlasting kingdom? Will you follow me home?" I don't know, perhaps you think this is, you know, it's lovely for some people, but I don't really feel the need for anyone to lead me through the dark. I'm picking my own way through life just fine. I don't see why this is relevant to me. Please don't mishear the claim, because the claim is a big one. The claim is this is not a kind of spiritual coping mechanism for people who are struggling. It's not a sort of poem that some people might find helpful or inspiring. This is a claim about history. And in history, 700 or so years before Christ was born, Isaiah promised he would come. And in history, during the reign of Caesar Augustus, he came and he lived and was crucified and he rose again. And in history, he will come again and set up his eternal kingdom. And on that day, all those who thought they never really needed him will wish they had followed him home, because they'll wish they were part of his kingdom of light. And that's why nativity plays can be so dangerous, because they can leave you in the dark, because they can make you immune to the one person who could lead you into the light. I'm going to get off my perch. At Emmanuel, we normally have a time just after the talk for people just to ask their questions. We won't do that today, because people probably aren't particularly prepared for that. But if I've said things that were unclear, or perhaps you feel I've made assumptions that you want to challenge, or perhaps you just want to find out more about these things, do come and find me at the end. I'd love to talk. And there's a little booklet that I'd love to give you that can explain things more clearly than I can. But what we'll do now is we'll just have a few moments of quiet. Christmas is often so hectic. So as we sit, let's just give ourselves a little bit of time to pause, to slow down, reflect on some of these things. You might want to be praying in the quietness of your own heart. But there'll be a carol playing in the background, and then I will lead us in a short prayer. So just respect one another's privacy and just have a couple of moments of quiet together.